Hi everyone, good afternoon. Thanks for joining. My name's Derek Arden, as you know, but if you're listening to this on or watching this on YouTube, a very warm welcome. Today I've got a friend of mine who I've known for 15 years from when I attended an NLP training, and then Shelley Rose Chavez was kind enough when I was president of the Professional Speaking Association to do a piece on the stage, which was fantastically received. I've met Shelley in Canada, and today she's coming all the way from Hamilton, which is close to Toronto in Canada. Hamilton and is close to Niagara Falls, and I think Shelley is looking out on Lake Ontario at this very moment. So
I am indeed.
I've had Shelley's book, Words That Change Minds, for a number of years. It's personally signed. I'm very proud of it, but I understand there's a third version out, which is even more detailed, and got to the number one in the business book charts in Forbes in, that's in the States, I guess, rather than the US, Words That Changed Minds. Shelley's an expert on NLP and a number of other influencing subjects, which I'm passionately interested in. And Shelley's in Toronto, her husband's in Berlin. I'm not quite sure how they figured that one out, but he obviously missed the lockdown, missed the last flight. Shelley, I want to ask you about this bus stop that you talk about. I think it's a fantastic metaphor. How does it go? You need to go to their bus stop before you can get them on the bus. Shelley Rose Chavez, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Derek. It's really fun to be here with you, with all of you. And you know, the bus stop is a core principle for me because I'm passionate about helping people understand each other. And the big issue is most of us speak from our own experience. We evaluate things by whether or not it affects us. And so unless we can find a mechanism to go to someone else's bus stop and find out what life is like there, how do they think, how do they feel, how do they make decisions, what motivates and demotivates them, how can we have any kind of impact? So I talk to people about going to the other person's bus stop and from their bus stop, inviting them on the bus. Now, of course, you can't force anybody on the bus metaphorically, but if you can understand how they think and use language that represents their experience, which you can learn, then you're more likely to get them on the bus. And then you can take them somewhere useful for them and somewhere useful for you. And so that's what the bus stop is all about.
Fantastic. So how did you get into NLP and the lab profile and the psychology of it all?
Yeah. Well, you know, as you know, I've kind of specialized in one area that's an offshoot of NLP called the language and behavior profile or lab profile. But I got started in NLP in 1982. I was a new immigrant in France. I found a job as a communication trainer and I worked for a training company. And then in 1983, I think it was actually, somebody came back from California amongst our contacts, and they had just taken this course with some guy named John Grinder, and it sounded all very interesting and had a really weird name. And I ended up taking the second NLP practitioner ever given in France. And everybody else was French. There was one other English speaker in me. And I have to tell you, a wee little story is that we were learning about visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, but we're in France. So of course, somebody has to say, well, what about olfactory and gustatory? And the French trainer at the time gave a very clear, very French, here's a bus stop alert explanation. He said, well, you know, those senses are not very highly developed in America. So lesson number one, don't insult your audience so by saying certain things like this, but that was my start. And then I discovered these particular patterns where you could take someone's language and be able to predict and understand and influence their behavior. And I was in like Flint. I love language, I speak languages, and I couldn't get enough of this stuff.
And so you listen very carefully to people's language, which I do, but I tend to just repeat it back rather than be able to think through where they're coming from. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, Derek, would you mind if I decoded what you just said first?
Yes,
and then answered your question.
I didn't know
you were going to be a subject during the conversation.
Brilliant.
So you said you tend to do, you tend to listen to people, whereas I only do this. So what you were doing was an implied critique, if I, of what you were doing. Is that right?
I guess so.
And if you were, because now I'm doing a little bit of mind reading, what it indicates is that you were using a language and behavior, a lab profile pattern we call away from. You're looking at what you don't want to be doing. You were implying, not directly, but sort of indirectly, that, well, that's something I do, but I don't really want to do it. And we call that away from language, because that's an indication of somebody saying, oh, this is something I'd like to get away from. Whereas when somebody's talking about a goal or a particular benefit that they'd like, and it could be about the same topic, then they're using toward language. So about moving toward a benefit or a goal that I want. So when you listen to someone's language, are they saying, well, we've got to avoid a risk, or this is something I do that I'm not all that happy with? That kind of language is away from, and this is what I want to achieve is more toward language. And that's an example of one of the pairs of motivation triggers that we listen for.
Now, the newspapers and the press use away motivation all the time, don't they, to sell goods?
Absolutely. Away from motivation is actually a stronger motivation in the general population in a general context, because fear is a bigger motivator than the desire to get things. Now, that's very, very general. When you're actually talking about groups of people, smaller groups of people or companies or cultures, it's very, very contextual. But in the context of current events, how papers are sold and clickbait is done online is by fear or problems that are urgent. You know, even when you open your email in the morning, what do you do first? Is it the important stuff or the urgent stuff? Most of us will do the urgent stuff. It just calls to us.
Now, Patricia Fripp tells me never to use the word stuff. So I'm going to turn that back on you. And I saw that you used the word stuff.
She's right.
But I heard Richard Bandler and John Grinder using the word stuff all the time. This sort of stuff that's out there, the unimportant stuff. So language is interesting, isn't it? Because I get a bit confused listening to all you experts sometimes.
So where should we go from here?
Well, I'd like you to explain to everybody the stagecraft that you would do on something here when you tell a metaphor. Mm. So if you tell a metaphor, why you do something from this side and why you do something from that side, because everybody on here has to present, even if it's only individually, to each other or persuade people. So
yeah. Well, I love that topic, Derek. Thank you. You know, the last time I presented at PSA in, I think, October last year, I actually did stagecraft. And this is based on an NLP concept called timeline, that people put their past, their present, and their future in very particular places. And the most common way that people do it in the West, but I do a lot of work in Japan, and it's, I found it similar there, is that people tend to put their past on their left. So that would be here. They put their right, the future, on the right-hand side. And you can watch a speaker gesticulating to their right, and then the present somewhere here. But the issue is, if you're talking to an audience, they're facing you. So if I want to talk about a problem, or I want to talk about something in the past, I'm going to put it on my right, which is now on your left. If I'm talking about something happening in the present, I'll put it here, and the future over here. And this way I can create movement towards a goal. So we do this on stage when we're presenting live, but I'm online with you and I can use this movement. I really want a presentation or an online experience to be a journey. So we pick up issues and challenges here. We look at the solutions and then we implement them. And you can actually begin to feel a kind of movement happening. And that's so much more motivating than non-professional presenters who just sort of fling information at you and there's no movement. There's just tons of information. Whereas you summarize, you go, okay, now we've done this and we're moving over towards this. And the next thing we're gonna do is right here in the middle. So you can see where we've come from, where we are now, and where we're going. Does so it helped to do a little bit of a demo there. Yeah,
that was great. Fantastic. Does everybody have the same patterns, though? It's not like those eye movements where 20% of people go one way and 80% of people go the other. I'm just curious about.
Yeah. No, it's a majority pattern. But guess what? In groups, majorities control. That's why when you look at politics today, groups who are minority know that a lot of their needs are not being met because group dynamics kind of rules, they go with the majority. That's why white men have ruled so often, because they're the ones at the table and in the room. And now things are beginning to change.
Wow. Now, I just talked about eye patterns, and some of the people here won't know what I'm talking about, I suspect. Can you just give us a minute on eye patterns?
I can. I'm not a total expert in this, and a lot of it has more recently been debunked, but people have a tendency to move their eyes in certain places when they're accessing certain kinds of information. So upwards is more visual, so that people tend to be looking at an image in their head. Another way that people do visual is they unfocus their eyes. So like, I'm seeing a bear in my mind's eye right now, and you can see that there's not much focus in my eyes. And down to the left and down to the right are more internal dialogue or being in touch with a feeling. And it's when you're looking at a face, etc. People have a tendency to do these things. Now, more recently, these were traditional things taught in NLP, you know, up to one side is visual construct. I'm imagining something I haven't seen before. Like, what would the child of an elephant and a giraffe look like? And people's eyes would go one side or the other. And when I'm re-seeing something that I've already seen, they would go another way. But studies have shown more recently that it's not as definitive as that. I've seen people on the internet boasting they can tell a liar because they're imagining things. You can't. It is just not that easy to do that with eye movements. So we're paying less attention to that now in the field of NLP than to many of the other cues that people give when they're talking to you.
Now, hypnosis was one of the things that came out of NLP. And I know when I did my first NLP training, I was pretty scared of hypnosis. And I guess a few people on this call and watching us on YouTube won't know very much about hypnosis. Can you give us a couple of minutes on what actually happens in hypnosis?
I can give you 30 seconds because it's not my area of strength either. I'm a specialist, you see, but hypnosis is often taught in NLP to help people get into a relaxed state so that they can communicate better with their unconscious mind. Like, one of the principles we teach in NLP is that your conscious mind is constantly thinking things. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm no good at this, or I'm bad at this, or I'm going to make a mess of parking this car, those are instructions that go from your conscious awareness to all the other parts of you that run you. And the whole purpose of inducing a trance or a relaxed state is to facilitate better communication. One of the coaches I've worked with talks about these instructions as your virtual assistant. So when you give yourself the instruction to not be good at something, your virtual assistant makes that happen. So in NLP, we use this relaxed state, this trance induction, so that you can actually begin to consciously feel the reactions that come from the part of us that we're not aware of every single day or every single moment. We bring it into awareness, and that can help with some very profound change work.
Like giving up smoking, anxiety, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and things like that?
Absolutely. I recently joined the board of a nonprofit called the Recognition Research and Recognition Project, and they have developed a protocol for PTSD that gets rid of PTSD symptoms in 3 sessions or less and holds for a year. And they have now published in several peer review magazines or publications, not magazines, about the what's called the reconsolidation of traumatic memories. And they're having a 90% success rate. And these protocols are based on and developed from neuro-linguistic programming. Now, they're not tooting NLP, NLP everywhere, because there's an awful lot of NLP charlatans out there, and these are serious researchers. And the reason I went on the board is to help them get to the point where they can train enough clinicians for all the veterans, the first-line responders, and now the millions of people that are suffering from PTSD because of the COVID-19 crisis. And so this is a protocol that uses hypnosis and uses NLP to reconsolidate those traumatic memories from PTSD so that people can live great lives and they don't have to have this night flashes and nightmares and terrible things hanging over their shoulders all their lives.
What's that called, Shelley? Can you put that in the chat box for us, or is this?
Yes, I can. So
maybe do it when we throw it open to questions or something like that.
Yeah.
Rather than do it now. But while you're looking at that, and thank you. It's in there now. And don't forget to put your questions in for Shelley. And remember, no question is a stupid question. All questions are good, because we don't know the answers to them, and sometimes it helps other people. Wind the clock back a little bit on NLP for people that aren't as familiar as you and I on it. It was really just a conglomerate, wasn't it, of different processes that people knew about, and that's what Bandler and Grinder put together and then kept developing.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. I think Bandler and Grinder were known for what's called modeling, and modeling existed well before NLP, and that is understanding what people are doing when they're being successful at something. So they modeled Virginia Satir on family systems. They modeled Milton Erickson, who was a great therapist, and they developed models of how things work and protocols and that kind of thing from actually looking at successful people. And that's one of the basic philosophies of NLP, is let's model a success strategy rather than look into why someone had a failure. And that's why I called my company Success Strategies.
Excellent, excellent. So what is the lab, how different is the lab profile to this more standard NLP work?
So NLP is like, there's researchers around the world researching and adding more publications and more techniques and more distinctions. And I participate in the NLP Leadership Summit, where a lot of us are gathering once every couple years, as well as having an online dialogue to actually look at the field of NLP. Where I got hooked was language. And back in 1984, I took an NLP master practitioner session in Paris and was introduced to something called metaprograms. And metaprograms are the filters we use to let information in, to communicate through, and everybody has their filters. It's kind of what's in between. And we've known about filters for a long time, but the metaprograms described specific ways that people either stopped information coming in or let it in. And then Roger Bailey took these metaprograms and created something called the language and behavior profile. And he developed some very useful techniques. He developed questions that no matter what the person answers, they are revealing their pattern. He developed a method for actually decoding that. And then he developed what we call influencing language, which is how you go to someone's bus stop. So once you've decoded their patterns, and this is why I train people, this is why I've developed apps that do this, is they allow you to go to their bus stop and invite them on the bus in the way that they think. And I've specialized in the lab profile, the language and behavior profile, and been developing technology and apps and all kinds of things so that people can just get better at understanding each other. And because it's all language, it works in any language. I've even developed, started another company, I have too many companies, and we developed a piece of software that decodes these patterns when someone sends you an email, and now it's commercially available and people can even try it out for free. I've developed an app called Husband Motivator. It's a free app, and yes, you can use it to motivate your wife too. And it actually shows you the model. You put in your husband or your wife or your boss's name, and you choose a context. And that's very important to understand about lab profile. This is not a profile about who you are. This is a profile that says what's important to you and how you think in a given context. So when you meet someone at their bus stop, you can then understand a little bit about them and then have a better impact with them. So the app will show you how to do that. And it comes with a script that you can even email yourself.
And you're going to send me details of that, or you already have, haven't you, in the what
I sent you an email, because you can even go husbandmotivator.com. It'll give you the link to both Android and iOS apps. Yeah. Wow. I think a couple questions came in, but I couldn't quite see them. They flashed through.
Okay, well, the first one is from Kevin, but he's switching the subject because he likes your lighting, I think. So tell us about your studio setup, camera lights, and the choice you made for that.
Love you, Kevin. Okay, this is a lot of work. So actually, I want to refer you to a really cool, easy video by a woman on YouTube called Hot and Flashy. Go figure. She has a YouTube video on lighting and using a ring light and how to do that. It's the basics. You do that and you get it right. So I've had to set this up here. I've been doing online for years, but ever since COVID-19, we've all had to up our game. So I spent hours learning about it. I've bought a couple of lights. Maybe I can just turn this. Oh, sorry, folks. You can see this light here.
Yep.
And I have a ring light here, and you can see the window and the front. It's very important to have light in front of you and then light on either side. So excuse me, all the moving around.
Well, that's really professional.
Yeah. So that I can actually, and then of course, now I'm in the wrong place. I need to put this down so that there's only a little bit above. And then don't get me started on microphones. That has been a journey and continues to be a journey.
Kevin continues, as he normally does, with questions here. So how do you account for your online presentation liveliness? Your eye life, is that natural to you offline? Or are you using a technique to be fully present with us and with us in your presentation?
Oh, well, here's the secret, Kevin, just for you. I have an arrow that reminds me to look at the camera and not at all the pictures going by, because it's really important to have that kind of contact. Now, I have produced digital programs that are online programs that are pre-recorded. And there it's a little bit different. And I'm not an expert on that. But one thing that I discovered that I was told by the people doing the filming is that this is very intense. I mean, that might be what you're commenting on. And when we're doing pre-recorded shows, we have one direct camera and then one on the side. And apparently the formula for recording is 80% face-to-face and then 20% there, just to give people a break. I mean, this is intense, right? How long do you want to have this woman staring at you doing all these things? Mm-hmm. So those were some of the things that I learned. But you guys energize me. If that's really what the question is about, I just love to be with people and share ideas. And
okay, I'm going to go back to the psychology just for a little while. On your YouTube channel, which I looked at, you talk about influence very much, and you talk about the words and the language. Can you give us an example? Is that doing what I did, learning from Brian Tracy, saying, "How are you today? I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking," and programming yourself and having a laugh? I think there's more to it than that, isn't there, Shelley?
Yeah, there is. I mean, and you know, all of us have been told to listen to other people. And the problem is, what do you listen to? I mean, other people are giving you a fire hose worth of things, and all this stuff is coming in. Notice the problem space here. All this stuff is coming in and it's too much. What do you do with it? The language and behavior profile guides you into exactly what to listen for. So let me give you an example. Everybody knows someone like this, someone that's hard to convince. So you get all enthusiastic and you say, "Rah, rah, rah, I got this great idea, you're gonna love it." And they go all skeptical on you. Well, the reason they do that, like there's a general reason and then a specific reason. At a general level, when you're really enthusiastic, at a below conscious level, you're telling that other person what to think. "Oh, you're gonna love this. I loved it, you'll love it." Well, maybe they wanna decide for themselves. So, but at a more specific level, when someone is in a mode where we call this internal, they are motivated to judge things, decide things. That's actually a trigger for them. They like to do that. And they like to gather information and evaluate it for themselves based on what's important to them. And so the worst thing that somebody could do when someone's in internal mode is to make a definitive statement. "Yes, I know what we need to do. Here's what we should do to get out of this problem." Even if your solution was a good one, it's off the table because they don't want to be told what to do. So the correct influencing language when someone's in internal mode would be to offer a suggestion or offer information and invite them to decide for themselves. So that might go something like this: is I notice that you've been working on XYZ issue for a while. I was thinking about it. Can I make you a suggestion? And notice I've ask that as a question first, just so that, you know, the door will open. And then I need to make a suggestion. I need to look credible. And like not, oh, I'd like to offer you a suggestion. No, be credible, be confident, but say, I was thinking that maybe if we did this and this instead of that and that, it might give it a better result. What do you think? Now, notice how powerful that is compared to, oh, I can see what's happening. Let me explain. Like someone who's in internal mode doesn't want to have it explained to them. So I like to assume that everyone is in internal mode until they prove to me that maybe I have a lot of credibility, and then maybe they've gone more external to me. So they just take things in because I'm credible. It's easier and probably better for us all to assume people are internal and invite them to judge and decide for themselves. And that's a very powerful communication technique because it opens people's minds. And that's one of the reasons I called my book Words That Change Minds. I want people to know what you have to do when you've got different people with you and what you can do about it. Yeah.
By the way, I love the way you leaned in and dropped your voice tonality to explain one of
those
things.
Is it sexy?
So I thought I'd just mirror it and see if it worked.
Well, I think you're pretty cool too.
Shelley, we nearly come to the end of this session, and thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got a few things to share with us and how people can find you. Would you like to do that before I ask you the very final question?
Sure, I'd love to do that. Thank you so much, Derek. I was talking a little bit about my program. I have it's the most in-depth program that I've ever created before. And it's called Advanced Business Influence. And it's a 6-month program, but it's only 15 minutes a day. And if you're a trainer or a consultant, or you're working with organizations or groups, or you're an independent coach, this is going to give you real in-depth information on how to use the lab profile and get it in the muscle so that you can just use it. And it's called the Advanced Business Influence Program. And we're having a special on right now. And if this is something that interests you and something that you'd like to do, it's $700 off, and you can pay either each month for 6 months, or you can pay it all in one go. And I wanted to offer that to you because if you're interested in this and you want to truly master it, here's an opportunity to save a lot of money and get the program. But I also, there's a number of things that I've got out there for free that I'd love you to try. If you want to have your own lab profile, all your motivation triggers and your productivity patterns for you in the context of work, the link is thelabprofile.com, and I've sent that to Derek, thelabprofile.com. You can get your own lab profile. And of course, there's the husband motivator, and you can also try our app for email. On the homepage of that company, Libretta, Libretta.com, for free, you can stick in an email text and receive back an interpretation, a diagnosis of what patterns the person was using, whoever wrote that, and what language you might wish to use with them to have an impact. So those are some resources I want to make sure that you have.
Fantastic, Shelley. Thanks for that. So before I turn the recording off and open the questions up to everybody, what would your number one tip be for everybody as we come out of COVID-19 into this strange world we're going to be faced with?
This is a strange world. Number one tip. Oh, there are so many. One of the things that I have been struggling with, and I know a number of people have, is really deeply realizing that things are going to be different and we don't know exactly how. Like, there's part of me that really just wants this all to be over. Okay, I can hunker down. My husband in Berlin, he lives in Berlin and I live here in Hamilton. I'm hoping he can come over in towards the end of June when things open up. But we're going to have to be in quarantine in the house, no going outside, no going anywhere for 2 weeks. And, you know, we can hunker down, we can cope through this. But what's actually really happening is things are going to be different and we don't know how. So there's all this uncertainty. So my number one tip that I'm giving me, as well as everybody else, is to really get in touch with all of our strengths, to make sure that we're communicating with our unconscious mind that really runs everything in a way that gives us confidence. So I want to tell my unconscious mind, hey, Shelley, you've dealt with a lot of disasters and unpredictable moments. you can handle this and you're going to thrive. So I want to be doing a lot of mindfulness. At night I meditate because I found it difficult sleeping with all the stuff going on and I you know, and all the politics and terrible things in the streets right now. So I've been making sure that I've been meditating and reinforcing the things about myself that are going to enable me not only to survive, but to thrive. And I think the messages we give ourselves are really important. So listen to how you talk to yourself. And if it ain't good, change it. That would be my tip.
Fantastic, Shelley. I'm going to unmute everybody and see if there's any questions while we're recording. So everyone, you're unmuted now. Any questions for Shelley?
Or comments or opinions? Or comments.
Martin from Leicester.
Hi, Shelley. I was interested in everything you said, and I like the way you finish by quoting your program, and you've called it advanced business influence. That word advanced is very popular amongst people who are selling things. And given that this is your expertise, your area of expertise, was that the first word that came to your mind, or are there other words that you would use differently? Because advanced is a very common word used in similar circumstances.
Yes. Yeah, so as you say, common, that would be lab profile sameness. But that's not the reason why I took it. As you can imagine, we did an awful lot of thinking before our team chose how we were going to call this. And it was it's a work-oriented program. So business was in there. It's about influence and impact. We wanted that in there. But to tell you why the word advanced, and I'm sure that we can find some other synonyms. The reason you use advanced is the same reason you would never sell condoms with packages that said small on them. No one is buying basic things. No one will buy a package of small condoms.
So that's why I've got. That's why I've got four children.
Your condom was too small. Okay.
Right.
You asked. Sorry. You got it.
I'm sorry.
Great answer, Shelley. Who else has got something to throw into the pot? But not.
So constantly. Now you've been warned, everybody.
So good, Eric.
Duncan, thank you.
Hi, Duncan.
Hi, Shelley. So I'd like to ask, what have you found to be one of the most effective techniques for influencing in the workplace?
The suggestion model. And this is a technique that I teach, and it's designed for people who may go internal on you. And it has four steps. Would you like me to explain it? It's very simple.
Sure.
Yes, please.
So step number one, make a suggestion using the language of suggestion. Oh, I had an idea and it might be good if we were to blah, blah, blah. Step one, make the suggestion. Step two, use away from language. Say what problem it avoids or prevents. Step three, toward language. What benefit does it gain? And step four, why it's easy. So let me make a suggestion. I suggest that you go to thelabprofile.com and get your own lab profile done if you like. That way you won't be wondering what patterns you have and not knowing, and you'll get an explanation of all of your strengths and needs in communication in the context of work. And it's really easy to do. It's a 5-minute survey. Now, that's a powerful technique when combined with credible body language and confidence, but it works in email. And the other technique that people adore that I developed is the bad news formula. You know, how many times a day do we have to tell people something they don't want to hear? And what most people have learned is the horrible feedback sandwich, which has trained people never to listen to anything nice. Because if somebody says something nice to you, oh, gee, Derek, that was such a great thing you did. What are we all waiting for?
But,
and then the thing you screwed up. And so it's program people to never take in a compliment. And I like to separate that. If you have a compliment, phone somebody up when they're not there and when they're not going to answer the phone, which is easier today, leave them the compliment and then hang up. Run into their office if we ever get to go to offices again. Tell them the thing you liked and the positive consequence it had and say, gotta go, and leave. If you stay there, they're going to wait for the other shoe to drop. Now, if you actually have to criticize somebody instead of making a suggestion, maybe the suggestion model will work. But if you actually have to get bad news to somebody, the bad news formula has a few steps, and it's based on two psychological principles. One is primacy. The first thing you heard is the thing you remember. And recency, the last thing you heard is the thing you remember. So establish a bit of rapport, have a conversation, and then you do, whoops, now I'm hitting my microphone. Bad news, but's very important. Good news and good news and good news. So you put the bad news right at the front, but then you say but, so that people know something else is going to happen. Now, people say, well, what if you have no good news? Well, you find some good news. And, you know, it works. I have some funny stories about this, but it works even when you know the bad news formula. So bad news, but good news and good news and good news. And I've talked a lot more about that in my book, Words That Change Minds. By the way, if you want the new edition of Words That Change Minds and you like ebooks, I don't know what the price is in the UK. In the US, it's $1.99. So it's a steal. We want to keep the ebook as a no-brainer, non-decision. If you want it, it's $1.99, and whatever the equivalent that is in pounds, etc. And we also have an audiobook if you're the kind of person who likes to run or walk and listen. So I hope that answers your question, Duncan.
Kelly, just one thing there. You said, so you give out the bad news first. So there's no good news at all at that point. You give the bad news first. You really screwed this up, but you're a really good guy and you've done some fantastic work and we've still got a bonus for you.
Shall I give you an example? Would that help?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I had done, just very briefly, I had done a bunch of training in customer service and managing customers' expectations and developing customer philosophy around the world for a software company. And 3 months later, I still hadn't received my check. So I wrote to George in Payables, who I know, and I said, hey, George, you know, it's been 3 months, haven't received my check. And he wrote me back and he said, dear Shelley, I know you haven't received payment yet, but I'm going to see the VP of finance this week, and I'm going to put your invoice in front of him again, and I'll let you know as soon as I know when the payment is coming. So I'm in my office and I went, oh, okay. Wait a minute. And I wrote him back. I said, I taught you that. And he wrote me a little smiley face. But you can do it about anything. Let's say you have a client who wants something and you can't give it to them. You could say, I don't have this available, but I've got something that goes some way towards meeting your needs, and I can get it for you relatively soon. And I think at least this need and this need that you had will be satisfied.
Got it. Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm glad we've still got the recording switched on for everybody.
I bet everybody can think of at least 2 people right now that you could write a bad news for, either in your email or in a conversation. Yeah.
Now, you said all the techniques you've talked about over the last 15 minutes still work on email. They don't get diluted by email then.
No, they don't. You know, people naturally take in language structures and forms that match how they think. Then we just do this. If you've got someone who's always thinking about what's going wrong, and you see it in their email, they're trying to prevent and solve problems. When you use away from language, they are going to be much more likely to cooperate. Let's say you want to make a suggestion to someone who's in away from mode. You can say, well, I wanted to suggest that we do this in order to prevent X problem and not have Y problem. And then what do you think? Well, that's much more motivating than you saying, hey, I've got an idea that's going to enable us to be bigger people and better people and et cetera. So that's not going to be very motivating whether they hear it from you or read it in an email or a text.
Fantastic. Shelley, we're coming to the end of the interview. Thank you so
much. Oh, no, not the end.
Yeah, afraid so. Until next time, Shelley, will you join us again?
I'd love to come back.
Fantastic. So thank you so much for joining us. I was looking at Shelley's YouTube channel. Don't forget to go to there. Remind yourself of all the interesting things that Shelley's talked about. And the reason I did a second NLP program was I didn't get it the first time, so I wanted to get it the second time. And this recording will be on YouTube, hopefully by tomorrow if everything's working. So Shelley Rose Chavez, thank you. I hope your husband joins you from Berlin very, very quickly. And a thumbs up for everybody for Shelley before we turn the recording off. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. Great to be with you.